was no longer with us. And it's a very frightening thing. And here the Paskaliyah to some degree really focuses upon this. The David of Lira said that here am I. And who has overcome me? Who has won over me? A moth, an osh, a moth, a nothing of a nothing in this world, the most insignificant living thing in this world, has more power over me. Here is David, the Melech of Klal Yisrael. The purpose of creation is Klal Yisrael. Who is the leader of Klal Yisrael? David, Melech Yisrael. The Melech HaMashiach is a descendant of David. It all comes back to David. David is the leader of Melech HaMashiach, of Malchus David. David is where it all starts. And David here is saying that who am I to make it a moth? A moth, a little teeny nothing that you can just flick away and you can take out, snuff out its life. This, David says, has overcome my bones, has overcome me. Why? It's because of Va'avoini. When a person allows himself to stumble in sin, then even the greatest of the great, with all of their might and power, they're worthless. They're worthless even connected a simple little creature like a moth.
Is this related to what we say in Tachanun, the Osha Show Mikasa?
Yes, exactly. Osha. Because we had this, we had on Friday as well. Friday we spend more time on this, on Pasuk Yud, the Osh. Pasuk Yud, Choneni Hashem Ki Tzarli, Osh Shesha V'chas Eini. We had a whole long discussion exactly how to put, where to put the commas, the order and interpretations. But the word of the Osh Shesha means it has decayed. And the word decay comes, is a borrowed word. It comes from the Shemesh Osh. Osh is a moth. A moth is a creature which Hashem gave its incredible koyach to eat up clothing. It has a special pleasure in consuming our garments, material. It's very interesting because garments, what exactly is a garment? Well, there was leather. I don't know if an osh. Do not eat leather. They eat cloth. Okay, but a garment is a beged. A beged is a lavush. It represents garment. There are two different types of garments. We talked about this many times. There is a garment whose goal is to cover one's nakedness, to take away shame. And then there's a garment that's not there to take away shame, it's there to give honor. A person wears a garment, even if Adam and Chava would not have sinned, and Adam and Chava would not have had a Yetzer Hara, and there would be no shame in being undressed, there would still in this world be a need for garments in order to give honor. L'chavoid ulesef aris. And where do these two things interact? It interacted on Yom Kippur, the Gemara versus Yom Kippur, with the Kohen Gadol, the Bizman, Shabbos, Hamid, Shikam, during the good times, during the times when Klal Yisrael was supreme. The clothing that the big day Lavan that the Kohen Gadol wore, was dressed when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, was from the most exquisite, expensive linen that was in the world. And the Gemara tells you exactly how much it cost. It was 800 coins, how much it would cost. When he went in three times, Kungal went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim four times. The first three times, the clothing was much more expensive. And when he went in to retrieve the Kafa HaMachla the fourth time, the clothing was a bit cheaper. Okay, but it was also very, the Gemara tells you exactly how much it cost. I think one cost 800 zuz, or whatever it was, the number 800. And the other time it was 600 or 600 zuz. And where did they get the linen? They got it from Egypt. Because Egypt at that time had the most expensive linen in the world. Like wool, Turkish wool. Right? It used to be such a thing that the wool... What?
Egyptian cotton.
But this is linen. Yeah. This is linen, this is not cotton. Today it's the most expensive cotton from Egypt. Okay, but in those days, the most expensive linen was found in Egypt. So there's a lot of drush. Why Egypt? So obviously you'll say, because Zechel Yitzias Mitzrayim. Okay, when you go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you have to remember where you come from, your humble roots. Avodim Hoyinu Lefaro. The Kohen Gadol needs to be enveloped and humble himself. Even though here he is, he's the holiest man in the world. And here we are in Yerushalayim, we have independence, sovereignty. We have Malchus. But don't get carried away with yourself. You have to remember, Avodim Hoyinu Lefaro, he was a slave. He put on clothing that was manufactured, made in Egypt. You were a slave in Egypt. Once upon a time, you made this clothing for someone else with the linen of Egypt. The other interpretation is it's from Egypt, because Egypt was the most exclusive, finest linen. At Kidei Kach, the Gemara is something very shocking, but it really explains what clothing is all about. It was sheer. It was so fine that when you put on this clothing, you can see right through it, transparent. So what's the purpose then of wearing
you say about silk?
Not silk, linen. The linen, the Kohen Gadol, when he won, he wore the Big Dilavan. The Big Dilavan is linen. It was sheer. So what's the purpose of clothing? Isn't the purpose of clothing that to cover the Erva? The answer is no. There are two different types of clothing. There is clothing that's meant to cover the Erva. That is called a Beged. A Beged, or called a Lavush. Lavush means Loi Boish. It's a contraction of two words, Lavush. Loi Boish. Or Beged Miloshnova, Bogod, is to rebel. Because Adam and Chava rebelled against Hashem, Hashem gave them the Yetzer Hara, and they recognized Ki Erumim. They were naked, and they were put to shame. So we wear a garment to cover one's nakedness, but in this parsha of the Big Day Kahuna by Aaron and the Kohanim, it doesn't say the word Beged. Maybe it does, I don't remember, but it says the word I'm sorry. It says Beged, I'm sorry. Big Day Kodesh. But lechavoid ulesefaris. The primary purpose is to give honor. So when you have clothing that is sheer, but is miyuchad for the Kohen Gadol, it does not have the element of taking away busha, but it does have the element of lechavoid ulesefaris. It gives a cut. Only he wears this garment. It's a statement of who he is. So that's what clothing does. You have the osh. What is the osh? The osh is a creature that is nothing. And this creature comes and eats up this clothing. This little nothing eats away at the honor of man. It eats away. You go with your closet, look at that, the moths got to the clothing. This is my honor. My honor, when I go to shul, I put on this nice, everyone, oh, look what he's wearing. He's wearing this nice, nice, beautiful suit. And who destroyed it for you? A nothing. An osh, a moth, has diminished your honor. Or a moth has exposed your shame. Okay, and David HaMelech is saying, and who is the most honored of them all? David. And David is saying that because of my Averos, all of these terrible things happened to me. Kikolu biyogun chayai. A sin brings a person, his life, to an end. And not just a happy end, a miserable end. Ushnosai, my years. There are different dimensions in life. In life you have your life. What would you call your life? Your legacy. And then you have, you know, you enjoy your years. Arichas.
The quality of life.
Arichas yamim v'shanim. And it says, and because of my sins, ushnosai bo'anocha, my years have ended with grief. Koshal ba'avoni koichi. Okay, that's more the quality. And due to my sins, my koyach is no longer here. And va'atzomai, my bones, which really relates to my essence. Who I am, or Sheshu, I've been decayed. And that has not just been decayed. No, it's if a person is defeated by a very powerful force, there's dignity. At least they reckon with me. If a major power has to come and fight with me, I'll go down in history, even though I'll go down in history as the loser. But look who had to come and fight with me. World leaders, they had to reckon with me. But a moth, I remember once saw a documentary about the assassination of Kennedy, President Kennedy. And you know who actually was the one who did it? It was I think when he died from lung cancer, Tom Brokaw, was that the one that on Channel 7?
Brokaw was Channel 4.
No, Channel 4, no.
Maybe he was 7.
Jensen?
No. There was an anchorman, 6:30 News. He's one of the channels. He's a very arrogant guy. Very arrogant. It was the same time as Don Rather.
Bill
Butel. Not Bill Butel. No,
you mean local or national? Local.
No, national. National. 6:30 News.
Yeah.
I think it's
Chancellor.
Jensen?
Chancellor?
No.
Jensen.
No. I think it's Broco. Is he alive, Broco? I don't remember
yeah,
the name.
Yes, he is.
No. He's alive? Broco's alive? Then it's the wrong guy. Maybe
everybody's
it's Jensen. I don't know anybody. I don't remember. And whatever it was. So I remember watching. It was very, very interesting. Very. No, today, I don't know about you, everyone loves conspiracy theories. The reason why I meant this was because it was controversial. Is when he concluded, he said something very nasty about Jews. That's why I remember, that's why people spoke about this. He was very fascinated about Kennedy. And you can go to the library, go to a bookstore, go on Amazon, you can probably find literally thousands of books trying to dig up conspiracy theories as to who really killed Kennedy. Right? You can go dig up all these crazy conspiracy theories.
I read a few back in the day.
See, everywhere. Who killed Kennedy? Who killed Kennedy? Okay, so he did his own research, and he was very interested in this. He did it. At the end, he said, by the end of the day, I don't remember his exact words. He was a very brilliant person, and he basically said that it's a very big letdown. That at the end of the day, the world and himself would have had great satisfaction if Kennedy was assassinated by Russia, by Cuba, by some world leader. It was the big, big plan, and they were conspiring to change the world in America. And he said in that statement, he said Hitler and the Jews. He said something very, very anti-Semitic, in the way he said it. I don't remember the context. Maybe you can Google, you can get this online. In his final end of discussing this topic, he said that the world, including himself, was yearning. How could it be such a popular, charismatic president of the United States during good time? How could it be just a thug, just a lone guy working by him, just guy out of a window, he shot him and killed him? Just like that, a nobody, a total nobody and nothing, not connected to any head of state, any world leader, any massive conspiracy. Maybe some aliens came to this world. It's a letdown. It's a total letdown. A nothing of a nothing. A guy, a meshugana, out of nowhere, he looks out of the window, took a shot, got lucky, hit him, and he killed him. What? That's the end of the whole story. We need it to be.
True, Pearson wrote a beautiful. I mean, he wrote everything. He wrote it, chapter and verse, exactly what the cause and effect was.
What are you referring to?
Drew Kennedy.
You mean in the assassination?
Yeah, he wrote a very long piece about it. Jack Anderson and Drew Pearson.
Peter Jennings.
No.
It was a payback for trying to kill
Right, Cloudy Trump. But over here, David is saying, but his point was, he was looking for a conspiracy theory. And he explained why. He explained very eloquently why. He was desperately seeking that Kennedy. Searching because it's just not satisfying that such a significant event, such a powerful person who was so well liked. My father told me many times that there's not a person living at that time that from that era that does not remember exactly where he was.
Right.
When
true.
They
That's
heard,
true. Yeah, I remember where I was. Yes, me too.
Sure.
It was every Shabbos, I remember.
And there were people that were supposed to get their dissertation to get a PhD. They canceled. They canceled. All the exams were canceled. They just passed everyone, even people that were supposed to get fired for their PhD. They canceled. The country was in shock.
Yes.
To such a degree that it never will happen ever again. It was such a shock. So people just can't deal with it. There has to be a big picture. It has to be that there was some big, big plan. How else are you going to justify what happened? And I think as Peter Jennings says, and guess what? I've done all, he was a tremendous bald guy, a tremendous arrogance, over the top. I've done all the research, and I've come to the conclusion that it was a one person who was a deranged person, acted alone, and got lucky, took a shot, got lucky, was in the right place at the right time, and that's it. And that's it.
You'll never know.
That's it. Well, that's what he said. Well, that's it.
You'll never know.
And he explained, though, very well, what a letdown. What a letdown. Such a major event where everyone was in such a state of shock. And nobody, just a lowlife, a deranged Meshuggah who got lucky. That's the whole story.
The main problem is that they were so secretive. In fact, Ayom Azeh, they're so secretive that of course everybody thinks that they're hiding something.
Okay, but he, so I don't know, listen, I don't know nothing, but this is what, and that's not my point. The point over here is he went and he made this invest. This is one, he did this special series on this. And it's a letdown. That's exactly what David here is saying. What a letdown. You know who I am? I am the Melech of Klal Yisrael. Who's Klal Yisrael? They're the purpose of creation. And who took me down? A moth. A moth. I wasn't taken down by a Molech. I wasn't taken down by the Plishtim. I wasn't taken down by Moav. Who took me down? By Nebuchadnezzar.
Maybe a better example is Titus and the gnat.
The Romans, so that's what Rabbi Eliezer says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he needs to punish Klal Yisrael, he elevates our enemies. So no one should say right. That exactly what he said about Kenani, just a lowlife, a moron, deranged person, take him down. Hashem takes our enemies and he elevates them. Nebuchadnezzar was a nobody. It was a third world country. It was the first fourth world country. It was nothing. A nation of barbarians. Barbarians and lowlifes. And Hashem gave them power to conquer the world. Why? Because Hashem had to punish Klal Yisrael for whatever the reasons are. And Hashem did not want to humiliate Klal Yisrael that we should be humbled. We should be punished by a moth. But David is speaking about himself. And he's telling us the Koyach of Chet. The Koyach of Chet is so great. Look what it can do even to me. Va'atzomai osheshu. There are many different ways to say that my bones have rotted. By selecting a term that my bones have been eaten away by a moth, that is a powerful statement that there's no glory in defeat in this case. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Pasuk 268. Mikol tzarai hayisi cherpa. To all my enemies, I was a source of disgrace. V'lishchenai. I think he put that together. But we have to really see inside. I forgot really what it means over here. Ma'oid, very much. Ufachad lim yudo'oi. I was a pachad to my friends. Ro'ai b'chutz. Those that saw me in the street, nodadu mimeni, they distanced themselves from me. This is something that we say in the kinos. There's a very common theme that we have in the kinos that when Klal Yisrael went to Golus, all of our enemies, they mocked us. They jeered. They have all these fancy words in the arts called kinos. I don't know what they mean. They jeered and they gnawed all these funny words, which mean they basically, as the Jewish people were being taken into Golus, they were being marched naked into exile. And we were,
just look at the Nazis.
And we were passing through. Oh, good for you, you lowlives. Get out of here. Get lost. Good riddance. Get rid of the vermin. Get rid of this. All the names are nasty. They kick us on the way out. That's exactly what David here is saying in his words. Let's see what is over here. Pasuk Yud Beis in the Mitzudah stuff. Pasuk Yud Beis on the bottom of the page. Mikol Tzarei, Mikol Masha Oisim Li Tzarei. Everything they do to me. He adds in some words over here. Mikol Tzorirai. Mikol Masha Oisim Li Tzorirai. That's a very important injection to this pasuk. Everything that my enemies have done to me, hayisi lecherpa lehorayim bi ki maligim olai velishchenai hayoidim yoisim imash oisim li tzorirai Lohem ani me'oid l'cherpa. Okay, in the bottom of the page, 268, in the bottom of the page. Okay, so the mitzvah over here is saying it's a very sophisticated translation of the words. He's adding words. It's very hard possible to translate literally. He starts out, mikolot sarai, after adding a word that does not appear. Okay, ikar, the main portion is chosar, is absent, min ha-sefer, from the book. From all of the horrors, the abuse and terror and suffering that was done to me by my enemies, the Mitsudos,
yes.
On the bottom of the page, 268, on the very bottom of the page, 268. The very bottom of the page, Mikol Tzorirai, Mikol Masha Oisim Li Tzorirai, Hoyisi Lecherpo Lehoroyim Bi. I was a source of disgrace to those that observed. Ki Maligim Olai, they mock me. Ha ha, look what they're doing to you. So there are two different categories. So it almost sounds like the Egel Hazov. In the Egel Hazov, there were 3,000 people that actually participated in the Egel. Who? Where was everyone else? There were 3 million people, approximately 3 million people in the desert. What were they doing?
Sitting on the sidelines.
They were watching.
In the stadium,
just sitting around and watching. Were they cheering? Not necessarily. But they were watching. They were tolerant. So here, we have two different categories. We have the SS. One of the big things study how many people in Germany were, how many people of the German army were part of the SS. Okay, the SS were the biggest lowlifes. They were the biggest Rishon. So it wasn't a big number. It was actually not a big number of people that were actually part of the SS. And when we look at Germany, we don't differentiate between the SS. And they're all part of the same team. Why are they all part of the same? Because they were all, not only were they tolerant, not only did they approve, they actually encouraged. They encouraged and cheered them on. They cheered on the SS. They helped them. Ukrainians, okay, the Ukrainians, the Polacks, they were not part of the German army. They were not part of the SS. But boy, did they help. Did they round up the Jews with glee? So here, Mikol Tzorai, look at the Tzorai as the SS. All of the Tzorais, they come into town with their tanks and their boots and their dogs and their orders. And everyone over there, all the people there were standing around. And I was like, finally, we can get rid of the Jews. Hoyisi, I then became Cherpa. Until now, until the Tzorai entered into the town, so everyone in the community, they tolerated us because they needed us. We gave them jobs, we supported them, we were good to them. But deep down inside, halacha biyadua Esav soinei Yaakov, they were just waiting for an opportunity. And finally, when the Tzorai came into town, then all of our neighbors, our friends, they opened up their mouths. And they said, "You Jews, you are a disgrace. You're scum. You're a cherpa to this world." And they rejoiced in what the goyim did to us. Mikol ma'ash oisim litzarai ha'yisi l'cherpa l'oroim bil ki maligim olai l'makni v'lishchenai ha'yodim yoisim ma'ash oisim litzarai lochem ani me'oid l'cherpa. And he's differentiating between two different categories of people, observers. There are observers who just observing from far, and there are l'shchenai, the neighbors who know more details about what they're doing to us. They really rejoiced. Me'oid, me'oid cherpa. According to the mitzvah, this word me'oid is going back to the word cherpa. It's coming to tell us, take the word cherpa and repeat it. Me'oid cherpa. Make believe the word cherpa is repeated a second time. And then it says, u'pachad lim yudo'oi. Ani lefachad lochem ki b'roisam tzorasi yifchad lenavshem shloyikra lochem kim mikri. So that means other Jews, people that were my friends. Talk about the Crusades. This was a very big. This is a very very big frightening thing in the Crusades about the Jews. The Crusades were the Jews of Germany. What about the Jews of France? Okay, so the Jews of France, they originally issued a letter and said, we don't have this problem. It's not our problem. And those words came to haunt them because years later, they came for them. They came for the Jews of France, big time. And then, again, I remember the famous story, I remember the exact thing. During the time of the First Crusade, the Jews in Germany, the First Crusade affected the Jews of Germany, not the Jews of France. They on their way to march to Jerusalem, they swooped down into Germany, along the Rhineland, all the Kehillas. And the Jews of Germany sent letters asking for assistance from the Jews of France. And the Jews of France says, well, we'll be mispalul for you. But in their writing, there was some expression, I don't remember the details, time to brush up, Tisha B'Av is coming around soon, brush up on Jewish history. And they said something like, we're safe. We're safe. It's your problem. And that was a terrible chil Hashem. And that letter that was sent back haunted them to an extreme when years later, the Crusaders came for the Jews in France, and it was a bloodbath. So here it says over here, the lim yudoi, my friends, they're filled with pachad. We're next. We're next. The goyim, the enemies, have entered into this town. They have sacked the town. They've murdered and pillaged everything in this town, and the neighbors, the goyish neighbors, are thrilled. They're thrilled and they're rejoicing because they view us as a disgrace, as a cherpa. But the miyudo oy, my fellow Jews who live in neighboring towns and get word of what's going on over here, they are overcome with pachad. Upachad lim yudo oy, because they know they are next. They're going to be coming for them next. Roya bachutz. Then he goes further. Those who see me on the streets are roim oisim bachutzais, nodudu mineni. They distance like a bird. Novenod, nod means to be a wanderer. They disassociated themselves with me. V'hol chulachem ki chaydech adam levrech meirois choyli kosher v'davim megun benimas. People that see something disgusting, they run away. They, you know, this is like I told you this last week. It was very interesting to me. That you know, when someone, son Rachman Litzlan is going through hard times, and let's say even if he's in the news, okay, this happens all the time. You have a person that did an avera, didn't have all different types of averas, a ganef, he stole money, he was convicted of abuse, okay, a pedophile, children, he wasn't loyal to his wife. You name it, it's all out there, okay? All the garbage, people that are public figures. And this person, you know, he has a network, a social network. All of a sudden, television cameras come knock on your door. Oh, you're this guy's rabbi. What do you say about your congregant? He's a pedophile. What do you say about this congregant? He's a murderer. What do you say? He's convicted of grand larceny. Rabbi, he's your congregant. What do you say about him? Okay, or you go to the people, you know, his rebbeim in yeshiva. You raise such a Talmud. So what do you say? So some people, their gut feeling is, you run away a mile away. You disassociate with the criminal. I want nothing to do with this guy. This guy has put the whole community to shame. He embarrassed us all. You have major, major tightness on this guy. You lowlife. You did such a disgusting crime. You hurt so many people. You committed the worst of the worst. And now we're under scrutiny because we're your friend. We would have video clips of dancing away at your children's wedding. Right? We're dancing away with you and we're your best friend. And we're embarrassed. Okay, that's what I would do. Okay, you run for your life. And then there are people that they say, you know something? This guy made a mistake. He's gonna suffer big. Okay, he's gonna suffer for his crime. He's gonna sit in jail for who knows the rest of his life. But you know something? He's my friend. He's my friend, and I can't abandon him. I can't abandon him. He's one of ours. And I'm not defending him. Okay, I'm not going to defend him. There's no defense. But just because I'm not going to defend him, it doesn't mean we should throw him to the dogs. He'll get what he deserves. Well, don't worry, this fool he'll get. He'll sit in prison for the rest of it. He'll get what he deserves. And there's no defense, but you don't have to throw him to the dogs. Okay, where do you draw the balance? I one of the most shocking things in my life was when I saw something like this, and I ran for my life to get away from this thing. And I saw people that mamish embraced it. Okay? He's in trouble. He needs us. He needs us now more than ever. And that really shook me up. That shook me up more than the crime of this fellow. So there's some serious stuff. He's still suffering, Ani Yomazeh. And no, it was very shocking. And yet, what shook me even more is that his friends, some of them, they have no shibudim to him. They're not his family. He needs us. He needs us. He really messed up big time. And he needs us. And they went to bat for him. And that was a real lesson to me. You know, where do you draw the line? There's no excuse for what happened. But he has to be, how far are you going to go? He's being punished, don't worry. They're punishing him very, very well for what he has done. But how far do you really go? It's an incredible thing. David Elia says, and you should know with the person, think about it from the perspective of the person. When the person, when he's being punished, and he's thinking about his friends, who he invested in, who he was there for when they needed him, and he looks at them, how does he look at it from his point of view? Does he feel betrayed? Okay, he did an avera, but still, does he feel betrayed? So David over here says, this is the spitz. Look over here, what is really the order, the climax. The climax, Mikol Tzarai Ha'isi Cherpa. The people who really don't know much about me, but they hate me because I'm a Jew, and when they see the enemies destroy me because I'm a Jew, they were very happy. Look, this Jew boy, good for him, what a disgrace. The Lish Chenai Me'oi, and the people that know me, who know me very well, who know what they're torturing me, know what they're doing to me, how they're sending me off to gas chambers, they know all the details. Me'oit! Boy, are they happy? Are they thrilled? They're thrilled. What about my fellow Jews? I want to say now is that the end of the book, now, you see, that's not what the Mitzvah says. I want to say now we're taking a shift. What about my fellow Jews? So, fachad lim yudo'oi. My fellow Jews, they're terrified because they know they're next. They know when they finish with me, they're coming for them. And Royai Bachutz, Nodadu Mimeni. And my fellow Jews who see what's happening to me, they betrayed me. They didn't come to my rescue. They disassociate from me. There's an element of betrayal. Betrayal. Okay? I give you examples, but I'm not going to, but there are certain that I feel very strongly about. About having a couple of years ago in all the newspapers, about certain public figures who were accused that 50 years ago, they did not do enough. There was abuse taking place in certain institutions, and they let it happen. Okay, so there are a lot of knowns, not for me to talk. I don't know what happened exactly, but there was a lot of information that was spilled. And it was very interesting to see how people have very different opinions about it, and some people they were, that's right, throw them to the dogs. What's the expression? Throw them under the bus.
Yeah.
Okay. Throw them under the bus to an extreme, not just a little bus, a big double decker bus. Throw them under the bus. To an extreme. Really? To an extreme? Okay, you want to throw him under the bus? Would you have done any better? It was a different time 50 years ago. And in fact, this some of the people did infinitely more than the counterparts.
Well, they weren't caught.
In the secular world. In the secular world, it was a very confusing era. How to deal with this? There were no rules. And some people, in hindsight, did pretty good. At least, I don't know, you know, it's a matter of opinion.
Will the public at large accept that you're saying to your friend was guilty, he deserves to be punished, but I support him as a friend? Will they accept that? Or are they going to say you're part of the conspiracy?
You don't have to say anything. You don't have to say anything to the public. You just privately. Forget about the public. The public statement, better not. Don't make. You always see these mass murderers. They talk about this guy in Texas who shot how many people? 19, 20 people in the school. So they interview their father, the parents. And the parents say it's tzaddik. So the Amish say, what a bunch of tipshim, bunch of morons. Put the parents away. You say your son's a tzaddik? You know tzaddik, he's a murderer. Don't go say he's a tzaddik. So well, how do parents react? Just say nothing. You don't have to say anything. A parent is a parent. A parent obviously is their child. They're conflicted. But don't go say to the media, oh, you don't understand, he's a tzaddik, there's a reason why he did it. There's no reason, there's no defense. There's no defense for going and shooting up people like this. There's no defense, even though you're a parent. You're a parent, just hide in the basement. You don't have to go out and defend. So a person did a terrible aveira. You really can't defend them. What are you going to defend them? How are you going
to defend them? You're saying they're guilty and they deserve to be punished. Yeah. However, they're part of our community, they're our friends, and we're going to support them any way we can.
Yeah, they'll take a soundbite.
You know, you got to be very, very careful.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know. You got to talk to real professionals. How to respond. But all I'm saying is that at least the person, at least the victim, at least the criminal, should know that you're there for them. What are you there for? Whatever you're there for, the person did a terrible avera, you don't condone an avera, but you're there for them, because they're one of you, they're part of you. I mean, how where do you draw the line? Obviously, it's a very, very difficult issue. But
you have now organizations that go up to the prisons, they give support. To
incredible people. Support.
Yes, they were guilty. Yes, they did.
Exactly. But don't overdo it, you know. Don't overdo it. There's punishment, there's rehabilitation. You have to pay for your crime, but you know they're echad mishalanu. Yeah.
When Rabin was murdered, I forget who was that did it. His mother got up and she said she deplores terribly what his son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She said she deplores terribly what he did, but then she said, "I am his mother."
I am his mother. Enough said. Enough said.
It's
the Marillus. You need.
He was our friend, but he committed stuff and he deserves to be punished. But he's our friend. That's it.
But you have to know how to say it. You have to be very careful how you say it. You really need professionals to teach you. The OU, I don't really do anymore, but the OU years ago, they had certain scandals that broke loose. They paid big bucks. To hire the biggest professionals to bring into the OU to teach them how to deal with the media.
Yeah,
you have to know how to deal with the media. What?
With the Tzar Mordechai, with
right. They brought in, they paid a lot of money, people that specialize in dealing with these issues. So David over here is saying, and if you don't do it the right way, there's betrayal. Mm-hmm. There is a degree of betrayal in these very critical moments. David over here is saying it's the climax of this experience. My worst enemies have come and tortured me. So my enemies, of course, they're cheering. Oh, it's good for him. He deserves what he got. The people that know intimately what's going on, they're even more happy. Okay, period. And what about my fellow Jews? What about the people that I thought are on my team? So David says, well, my friends are terrified because they think they're next. So they're quiet. And the worst thing is, Royai Bachutz, Nadadu Mimeni. The people who see me out in the street, They run away from me. Which I'm homiletically interpreting is that the people who were my friends, they now totally betray me. Totally betray me. They don't want to know from me.
Radioactive.
Which I told you, it's a very delicate thing, you know. What exactly was the crime? What a guy's a pedophile, obviously is very different than if he gets caught, he didn't pay $18 on taxes. Okay? For some reason they come down because you cheated the government, you took a pen. You took a pen from someone and we consider it to be a bribe. Someone gave you a cigar, and you know, according to the laws, you're not supposed to take a cigar. That's a very different type of crime than someone is convicted of being abusive to children. Okay, so obviously, but there's a certain mahalach. Okay, let's see Rashi. Rashi Pasuk Beis says, "Mikol Tzarai."
That's where Rabbi Fran had a whole thing about it when a bacher came to him before Yom Kippur one year and told him something that he did, and he spoke about it on the tape. He said they mamish didn't know what to tell him. He wanted to do tshuva, but they said it's, you know, yeah, okay, you know, to be a good person from this day forward, but they said it's whatever you did, and it's, forget it.
There's a mamzer in the world because of you, and you're in a lot of trouble. What are you going to do about that? You're in a lot of trouble. And also 90% of this depends on the person's attitude. You have a guy that's a criminal, and he's belligerent, and he's saying I'm a tzaddik, obviously, you know, that's a different story. Okay, that's a different story. You have a person that's been convicted of a crime, and he says chotasi, chotasi, chotasi. Okay, that's a whole different story. Okay, let's see Rashi. Rashi pasuk bei says mikol tzarai me'es kol tzarai hoyisi charpa. I was a source of disgrace ligiduf for blasphemy. Notice that Rashi fundamentally differs with the perish of the Mitzudos David, whereas the Mitzudos David says mikol tzarai. Hayisi charpa to somebody else. According to Rashi, mikol tzarai, you have to add a word into this expression. From all of the things, all of the ma'asim, all of the actions that my enemies have done to me. Look back again in the Mitzvah stuff. Mikol ma she'oisim li tzarai. I have enemies, and the enemies are torturing me. The charpa is now being expressed by the observers. So there are two teams. There's the team Tzararai, and there's the team of the observers. Rashi disagrees. There's only one team here. The enemies are the ones that are cursing me. Okay, there are no two teams here. Mikol Tzararai, me'es kol Tzararai, hayisi charpa ligiduf, my enemies curse me. V'lishchenai, ani charpa mo'od, the neighbors that I'm close with, they hate me even more. Okay, what's the expression? Familiarity breeds contempt. Okay, the more familiar with someone, the more you hate them even more. Okay, upachal, you see something, something you see all the time. Yeah, you go to a shul, and you go to a simcha, and the rabbi speaks, and you watch how the rabbi performs, and you're very impressed. Wow, I wish I had such a rabbi in my shul. Unbelievable. And then 2 weeks later, you hear, they fire the rabbi. You fire that rabbi, we'll take him. Why did you fire that rabbi? He was unbelievable. We went to a simcha, he was phenomenal. How could you fire that rabbi? Familiarity breeds contempt. So therefore, v'lishchenai, those that know me well, ani cherpa me'oid. Okay, the goyim, the next, it's true in the Holocaust, the goyim that were the next door neighbors had more contempt for the Jews than goyim that were far away. Okay, the goyim that were far away didn't have the same contempt for the Jews as the goyim that lived with the Jews themselves. Upachad lim yudoi. Rav Michal, can we call upon your expertise in Old French?
Yeah, let me use the oi. A mes connaissances, to my acquaintances, connaissances, the people who know me, cognizant.
Okay. Mispachadim al koiro aside, they're terrified what has happened to me. Rashi does not say what it says in the Mitzudos, that they are afraid that they are next. Doesn't say that. If he said it because they're next, that would automatically mean they're referring to the Jews. the religious people, people that are on David's team, he just says is that when people witness tzoros, there's such a thing. Even if a person is immune, person is not shy to what they're seeing, it still creates a pachad. Did you see that clip yesterday? At which country was this clip? There was a bullfight in some.
Yeah.
I don't know. Where was it? In Spain?
Colombia.
And the bleachers?
Colombia
really? Looks like a third world country, what it looks like over there. And these bleachers? Yeah, the bleachers, they didn't look too good to begin with. So you see something. So is anyone here planning to go to a bullfight in such a stadium? I don't think so. Are you shaykh to such a thing? I don't think so. Yet when you see something like this, aren't you filled with pachad? Oh yeah, to see death in front of your eyes. Can you imagine? Could you imagine like Madison Square Garden? The whole half Madison Square Garden just collapses.
It was the outside stadium. Outside stadium
was it looked like from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. It looked like didn't look too safe.
Right.
It looked from who knows how long. Didn't look too good, and it just collapsed. So he over here, the Mitzudos Dov Rashi is not injecting this concept, is that you're afraid that you are next. There are two different types of fear. There's fear of what's going to happen to you, and then there are people that are good people that just seeing by someone else a tzara, even though you're not shy to this, it causes you pachat. Maybe that is why he is the word lim yudoi. Lim yudoi is a kind of it means someone that of deo, someone that you know well, someone that you are familiar with. But the word also has a connotation of a person that has das, an intelligent thinking person, a person that has a brain in his head, and he sees a tzara by someone, even though I'm not shy after this. It causes you pain. There's a pachad. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu does din in this world, it shakes you up. It doesn't have to always be for selfish reasons. Most of the time when people are afraid, it's because it's selfish reasons. If this person is suffering, that means I can also suffer. So therefore, I'm afraid. Why are you afraid? Because I'm afraid for myself. That's selfish. Let's say you're not afraid. Let's say it's not nogea you. This whole situation will never happen to you. So I couldn't care less. That's not a nice thing. That's not nice. You have to take to pause and to reflect that there are people in this world that are suffering. Over here, Rashi does not add the selfish element of pachat. The mitzudoy stuff, there's a very important difference between the two. The mitzudoy stuff, it says, pachat lim yudoi. Ani lefacha lohem ki beroisam tzorosi yifchadu lenafsham shlo yikre lohem ki mikri. What happened to them will happen to me. Rashi doesn't say that. Maybe that's what Rashi means. I'm not saying it's not what Rashi means, but there's no question that there is such a thing in this world of nobility. And when you witness a tzor by someone else, you pause, you reflect. There's such a thing. Mispachadim al koi roisai. Okay, I remember Adelsky was very, very shaken up when there was a tsunami. Never heard that. Most people like me never heard the word tsunami. Never heard that word. Never knew what that word was.
Tidal wave.
Never heard this word. Tsunami. What's a tsunami? Okay, years ago. It was a while ago. It's probably, I don't know, 10 years ago, a little less, whatever it was.
It happens every year.
No, what are you, not on this scale. A scale like this, so how many people died? Hundreds of thousands of people just died in modern times, in the modern world like that. Unbelievable. And Rabelsky was very shaken up. He was very, very shaken up. What? Just like that, in a matter of minutes? Hundreds of thousands of people?
It was a very frightening film to see that what happened. I mean, you see cars on a highway, you know, like you're on the Belt Parkway.
100,000 people, gone.
And sweeps all the cars from the highway into the water.
In America, how many people could care less about this?
You're still in Yellowstone.
Most of America couldn't care less. Sorry, I don't mean to be so nasty. I think in this country of 320 million people, most of this country, yeah, it's like going to the movies. Wow, look at that. People were swallowed up. Do we have to worry about this in our country? The most they're afraid of, can this happen over here? Oh, you're living over here. It's not even possible to happen in this country. So he doesn't worry about it. Okay, what's the lunch? What's the lunch? What's the dinner? What's on television tonight?
For mental health, sometimes you have to just shut it off. Otherwise, you can't worry about things you have no control of.
It's true. Okay, I'm not arguing with that. But there's also to be a person of compassion, to be a good person. You see suffering in the world, you know, does it have an effect on you? Adolsky was very shaken up when he spoke about this. He wrote about this. It's unbelievable. Like you realize what just happened? Do you realize what happened? The koyach of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Do you realize what's going on over here in this world? And he, you know, he discussed it. So Rashi does not add the selfish dimension that it's going to happen to me. And it's not a coincidence. We have a very powerful word called Lim Yudoi. Let's go to the next pasuk. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Nishkachti. Now this pasuk is an important pasuk. Okay, this pasuk is quoted. Nishkachti. Kimeis Milev. I was forgotten. David said no one could care less about him. We have to remember David was went through a lot of difficult times. According to what I remember, learning most of David's life, David was sick. He was in bed. He was not active. And people would just, you know.
Is that when he's talking about, or is it talked about when he's on the run, or?
Everything. Okay, there are many. I don't know. Obviously, it's subject to interpretation. When we started this mizmor, we learned that this mizmor, according to most of the commentators, is composed when David was on the run, when David was running away from Shaul. So then you're right that when David was fleeing from Shaul, people already they wrote him off. Yeah, he's gone. Next.
Sight.
Out of mind. Let's get the show on the road. Who's gonna be the next king? Let's move ahead. Nishkachti, I was forgotten. Kimeis milev. Hayisi, I was kichli oyve, like a utensil that is destroyed. That is not functional, and it goes into the garbage. Now this expression over here is using Chazal. Let's see first in the Mitzvah David, pasuk Yud Gimel. Even though David was alive, he was still like he was dead. Kichli like a utensil. Return the loymar. Kichli kol shuhu asher kol shuhu asher kishuhu nevad ein adam zaychro. No one remembers it. No one remembers. Yeah. Do you remember the cup, the paper cup you used yesterday for your cup of coffee? Do you remember if what color it was? Okay, we have over here, what? Every day we have different color cups. Do you remember, or you have known yeshivas, they always give the yeshivas, they buy, what are they called, the runoffs. The misprints. The misprints, right? It's very, very funny. I always get a good laugh in yeshiva when you look at the cups they have in yeshiva from all the major companies, Dunkin' Donuts, and Pepsi and Coca-Cola, you name it. Every company in the world ends up in the yeshiva dining room. And you look at the cup, what's the defect with this cup? What went wrong with this? The printing of this cup that would end up here in the yeshiva basement on the dining room table?
When it drips right through.
What was the defect?
Check them.
Always look for the defect. Because they get it very cheap. They give it away to the institutions very cheap because the company will not take it.
You need to check them before you buy it. Because right. I know my friend, he sold them. And he sold fantastic seconds to a camp director.
Yeah.
And it's a Davis divorce. And his name was Daniel, who was the biggest hit in camp. So he says, send me more. He didn't check them. The Schweitzers, the help that were putting out the morning breakfast didn't know what they were putting out. But they were putting out this apple juice in all the cups. They were urine cups. They were misprinted cups.
Urine cups.
You got to check your.
So what's so bad?
Before you buy them.
What's so terrible? Kids don't know the difference. They don't know the difference. As long as they're clean. As long as it's clean and as long as it's free. What things are they?
The stainless steel urine was very good.
Yeah.
Okay, a kli oive, a worthless utensil. David's saying over here that no one gives a second for, no one could care less. Rashi says, kli oive, which goes into the garbage. Kol lashon aveda. He's coming to the first word, oive. the tense. The word Avedav means is the present tense. It's the present tense. Ahalich libud kol lashon aveda ein lashon mefil al bal aveda loymar hu ovad oisa ela ho aveda oivedes nimen. An incredible concept over here. When you have an aveda, who is it lost from? Ordinarily, you would say that the word aveda refers to the master, the owner. The owner, he lost something. The object is not lost. Wherever the object is, it is. The object is not. You never heard an object go to a payphone and call 911. I am lost. The object does not consider itself lost.
It's a child.
A child. Okay, you're not convinced it's not a child.
When the officer asks, "Clear,
clear, clear, clear."
The officer asks the child if he's lost. He says, "I'm not lost. I know exactly where I am."
My mother.
You know, there's a famous story with who is that? I remember one of the Rashivas or Rebbes that was very tzaflagin, and he got lost. So he went into a phone booth. Those, remember what those used to be? Okay, you remember Superman? They had a phone booth. He went into a phone booth, and he dialed the operator, and said to the operator, "I'm lost. I need help. Can you please help me?" So the operator says, "Go outside and look for a street crossing and come back and tell me the closest sign you see in the a street cross." So he goes outside, he looks up, and he comes back and he says to the operator, I'm located at telephone and telephone. On top of the booth. They put a sign, telephone, telephone. That's the street crossing I'm located at. Any event over here, he's coming over here to just a technical difficulty. What does it mean over here? The word event. Kol lashon aveda ein halashay nefel al bal haveda. We do not refer to the owner loymar to say who ovad oisa as what we would expect. That's what we would expect it to say. Ela ho aveda oivedes mimenu. This is an incredible chiddush into the Hebrew language. Would you say the same thing in other languages? When you want to describe a lost object.
Why would you think otherwise?
Why would we think otherwise?
Because we talk about Hashavas Aveda.
The returning of an Aveda. So when you say this an Aveda, what does it mean in Aveda? Does it mean that the object is lost? Yes. Or does it mean that the owner of the object does not know where it is?
Well, that's both.
Same thing.
So he's saying it's not. It's an afkamina in the grammar. You see, you would think it's the same thing. But he's coming to say that it's not. We don't say ein kol lashon aveda, ein halashon noifel al baal aveda. In Hebrew, when you want to talk about a lost object, you do not focus on the owner and express that the owner, the baal habayis, he's a loser. He lost something. You don't go and knock the baal habayis. Al baal aveda loymar hu ovar oisa. Ella, instead, what do you say? Ho aveda oivedes mimenu. The aveda, it's the aveda is takalot. Who said this? Aveda is what the aveda needs to go to the telephone booth and call 911. Call zero. Kemodat Omar asher toivad mimenu, which is lost from him. So doesn't that prove? Doesn't the other way around? Asher toivad. Doesn't the word asher toivad mimenu seem to indicate to put the focus on the owner?
Doesn't it have to be lost from him? When we talk about a Shabbos Aveda, whether he's the Yayish or not, it has to be lost from him. If he doesn't even know it's lost, then he does not have a lost item. He has...
Well, obviously, they're both true. You can't differentiate. Obviously, it's two sides of one coin. When something is lost, they're both lost. The Aveda, the object, is lost from the master, and the master doesn't know where his object is. Yet Rashi is saying that this expression, a kli, kichli, hayisi kichli oived. The emphasis is on the kli, the expression. It doesn't say, I'm like a balabayas who lost the kli. No, the kli itself is lost. This pasuk, asher toivad mimenu. I don't know, it's in my little small mind, it would seem to me that the word asher toivad mimenu is going on the master. But obviously, that's not what it means. Okay, let's look over here. The Sif says again for one moment. I am like kimon difchar tevir, a broken utensil. The Acher Bunshach Arashi is almafarish kichli avei hoylech liyibud, it's going to the garbage. Be'uroi yoyser miruvach bi'yoyf, Rashi Shammah and Kal Lahavim. Okay, he's saying, go back to the word of here, I'm like a chli oyved. So he's saying over here, Rashi starts off by telling you a chli, the word oyved means ha-hoylech li'ibud. It's going to the garbage.
Destruction.
To destruction. Then Rashi goes along and he says, why do we add the word chli? Why do we focus on chli oyved? I'm just saying words, I don't know what I'm saying. Kol lashon aveda, ein halashon. Every time we have the word aveda, ein halashon noifel al baal aveda. Loimar hu avad oisa, he lost it. Elohu aveda oivedes mimenu. This aveda is going into the garbage.
Yeah, because that's the Gemara darshins the pasuk who mitzasa. It has to be able to be found in a place where it could be found, as opposed to, let's say, like Shatfanah. Why? That's the Gemara says, right?
Misplaced.
So if it can't be found, then it's not an aveda.
And why am I telling you this? Why are we dwelling upon this? Because this is Pnogea Shiduchim. Why? It says in the Chazal, when Hashem decided to create a zivug for Adam, he took Achas Mitzaloisav. And what happened? And then Hashem took the rib, made it into an Isha, and now Adam had to find it. And Hashem brought her to Adam. And Chazal's terminology is being that an Isha is Achas Mitzaloisav, and she's out there somewhere. It's an Isha is an Aveda. A Zivug is an Aveda. And I always tell you from my Rebbe Chaim Stiglitz, he says that the problem in Shaduchim today, okay, we're not going to get into detail over here, but the problem with Shaduchim is that the Bochrim, they're looking for Mitzias. They're not looking for Avedas.
They should go to law school.
A Shiduch is an Aveda. Are you looking for your Aveda? Or are you looking for a mitzia? You're searching the street with a gold meter to find, dig up some gold somewhere? You're looking for a mitzia on the street? The very big difference. Well, you're looking for an aveda. The aveda is not necessarily the shiniest and the best. It's yours. I want to find my watch. My watch is not a $5,000 watch. It's a $25 watch. It's mine. That's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking the streets to go find the $10,000 watch. There's a chilik to an aveda and a mitzia. It says in the Chazal explicitly that a zivug is an aveda. Now comes along Tehillim, Rashi in Tehillim, and says, an ish is an aveda. So Mark, what does that mean? Ish is an aveda. Does that mean that the girl out there, she is lost. She is lost from the chosan?
No.
She is not lost from the chassan.
He's lost from
us. How do you view when you look at the relationship between the chassan kala, and you have to add into the equation the fact that she is called his aveda? I know that may not sound very nice in the modern world today, when women have lots of power. Matzah, yes, Nakasha, my Rebbe. Matzah means it's mitzia. Matzah, isha matzah taif, but Chazal say explicitly that it's an aveda. It's the words of Chazal, not piece of Gemara. The Gemara calls it an aveda. So when you say that it's an aveda, do we say that until he finds the aveda, that he is lost, that he if he lost? No, you don't say that. You do not say that he lost something.
It's after he found it, he lost.
It's she is lost. You got to think about this, because the more I talk, the more I get in trouble.
You have to have something in possession before you lose it.
Oh, Mr. Marillas is saying, so we will go. That's what Chazal say. Chazal says that Achas Mitzaloisav, that Chava was originally in his possession. She was part, it's in the DNA. It was a rib. It was a rib. Okay, let's just read this Mam Chazal. Okay, on page 269, this is the point of Mam Chazal. This Chazal. Chazal quote this very, very often. This is a very critical pasuk. The Rashi and the Mitzudot steered clear of trouble. They only dwelt upon the end of the pasuk, comparing it to a kli of eight. I'm on page 269. The very bottom of the page. This is a very powerful pasuk which is cited very often in Chazal. Omar Rav, Ein Hameis Mishtakeach Min Alev Elo Liachar Shneim Osa Chodesh. A mace only forgot after 12 months. Shenemar Nish. This is the pasuk. This we're all comes from in Tehillim. Nishkachti Kin. As David said about himself, Nishkachti Kineis Mile. Nishkachti Kineis Milev Kama Hayisi Kichli Oved. And over here the editor added a perush kishen, and this is the perush. I guess he must take this from one of the Rishonim here on the Gemara. Kishen shekli avud. So how do you know it's 12 months? How do you know this? Look what it says. It's a shocking. This is the makar. The makar is this pasuk, and this pasuk compares it to a kli oved. The Gemara is saying that Taka, we don't really know how the mind works when it comes to a relative. But we do know how long it takes to forget about a utensil. Really? We do? To me, I don't know anything. I mean, this Chazal making this assessment. It's fascinating. Kishen shekli ovud mishtakeach mibolov li'acha shneim osa chodesh kachamitz. Shocking statement. This is the Makar. We say this all the time. People say Kaddish for 12 months. Right? Why is it Kaddish for 12 months? Okay, so Parshat Shad is because the Mishpat Shal Gehenim is 12 months. But there's also an element. There's also an element that's therapeutic. When you're saying Kaddish, there's a certain tsar, and there's therapy in saying Kaddish, and it helps the person to deal with the trauma. So for 12 months, the person needs this therapy. After 12 months, it's Nishtakach Min Halev. You don't need the therapy. There are many Ayin Panim LaTorah. How do you know? Whoever told you that a person thinks about a relative, a lost relative for 12 months? It's a pasuk in Tehillim. What does the pasuk in Tehillim say? This pasuk, what is this pasuk? So what? How do you know? So what? Because it compares it to a utensil. A nice utensil. Okay, over here, this is the point of the Chazal over here, because this Chazal is in direct conflict with the Pashup Shat of Rashi and the Mitzudas. Rashi and the Mitzudas are teaching the word oyved is a noun. Or not a noun, it's an adjective. It's describing a certain type of utensil. An inferior utensil. If I have a plastic cup, I couldn't care less about the plastic cup, even though maybe we should. Everything costs money, everything is expensive. But if you have something which is disposable, you couldn't care less when the day is over, when a few minutes later, it's gone out the window. There's no 12 months. According to Rashi, a kli oyved, and the Mitzvah means a disposable utensil, a kli that is destined to go in the garbage. You don't care about it. Yeah, over here, this plastic bowl. You know, maybe 20, 30, 50, 100 years ago, for sure, you can imagine showing this bowl over here to someone 500 years ago. They would worship it. They would literally worship this bowl 500 years ago. Will they throw this out 500 years ago? No way. They would keep this, they would use it over a million times. Today this goes in the garbage. 5 minutes, 2 minutes in the garbage. This is called the kli oved, garbage. Do you think about this for 12 months? No. You don't even think about it for 10 seconds. But let's say you bring into the table some china, something very expensive, an heirloom, something that's very, very chashuv, and it's destroyed. Do you mourn over it? The Gemara says it's davar gashmi. And Chazal have made an analysis that you think about and you have tsar over the loss of something that's precious to you, that's gashmis, for 12 months. And because the pasuk juxtaposes a neshama, the lathe, to a kli, that means that you're dealing with other things of your heart. It's a hekish, it's a drasha. It comes to a neshama, it's also 12 months. You would never ever know that you think about a neshama for 12 months if not for this pasuk that juxtaposes a neshama to a davar gashmi. And a davar gashmi we're able to relate to because it's physical, and we can do an analysis, and Chazal must have done some scientific analysis to make that determination, and now we can compare a neshama. Now, obviously, the Chazal, when it talks about a kli, they're talking about a very expensive kli. They're not talking about a kli oyved. So therefore, there's a very big difference in how you translate the words of this pasuk. According to Chazal, David is complaining, Nishkachti, I've been forgotten from people, Kineis Milev, like a dead person is forgotten from the heart of from other people. Because, and then he goes on to say a second statement. Ha Yisi, I was like Kichli, a very expensive, exquisite, one of a kind utensil that is oivei, that was lost. How long does it take for the human mind to forget about a very expensive utensil that was destroyed, that was lost? 12 months. So because the end of the pasuk defines the term of 12 months, the beginning of the pasuk is also must be discussed in 12 months. And when you have something in your heart, the memory of a relative in your heart, it lasts for 12 months. Rashi disagrees. That's not the way you read the pasuk. Nish gachti kineis milev, comma. Number two, hayisi, I was like a kli ovei, like a disposable utensil. We're not discussing an expensive kli, comma, that was destroyed. The word ovei defines, modifies the subject of the kli. What kind of kli am I telling you I'm like? I'm disposable. I'm worthless to people. I have no value. They don't care less about me. They don't give me a second thought. So now that's the partial shot.
Maybe he means after 12 months.
Well, it doesn't say that. According to Rashi, it's not saying that. That's not necessarily Rashi. Chazal is Chazal. You can't argue with Chazal. But Rashi is telling you the Pashup Shat. The Pashup Shat in the Pasik, the title of the word Oved means disposable.
Maybe it means after 12 months, I'm like disposable plate.
But that's what Chazal is saying.
Everybody forgot it.
That's a Chazal. That's what Chazal is saying. But that's not what Rashi is saying.
Maybe
Rashi is saying it's Kichli Shehoilech Leibush.
Maybe Rashi means after 12 months.
No, but he's not saying that. He's saying kichli shoholich. It's modifying. It's telling you the type of utensil, a kli that is in the kli. What type of utensil? A type of utensil that is meant to be put in the garbage. A kli that is hoylech leibud. An expensive utensil is not hoylech leibud. An expensive utensil is meant to be around forever. According to Chazal, it means it's a very expensive utensil which suffered a tragedy and it was destroyed. And people are in shock. Oy, look what happened. We lost this expensive utensil, and they reflect upon it for how long? For 12 months. By a chatuna, a chasana, what do you do by the tunayim? What do you do by the tunayim? You break an earthenware utensil. Now you don't break a garbage utensil. Today maybe because of Baltashkes, let's say now homiletics. Now you break by a wedding and make it an expensive utensil. And lechatchila you really should, because now what is it? Because you want people to be in shock. That's the pashup shot. Okay, by the tonight you break and people, oh, what happened? Are you something shattered? That utensil shattered? Oy. Oyvei, terrible, an expensive utensil. Now, we don't necessarily do this today with an expensive utensil for different reasons, but Me'ikar HaDin, it should be an expensive utensil in order to achieve the goal of shach. What's the shach? So don't get too carried away in the simcha. You know, there's a lot of yon. But if you take this Rashi and you inject what Rashi here says, or take this Chazal, and you inject that Chazal into what happens by a wedding, you're basically telling the people, this makes things very, it really makes a lot of sense. Well, let's take a sort of moment to explain this. Today, you go to a wedding, they do the tenoyim. And then what do they do? What exactly are you selling about the tenoyim? The chosan and kala commit themselves to get married. The caterer has been paid, the guests are here, the kala is wearing a gown, the chosan is wearing a nice suit, we already have the chosan's tish. What do you think we're doing over here? We're playing checkers? Of course we're getting married. The whole tanayim today is a joke. It really is a joke. The tanayim was made the time of Chazal when there was a delay. There was a delay of exactly 12 months. 12 months. They had. Well, I shouldn't say the erisin. That's not really true. I'm not necessarily saying the correct thing, but it used to be. You see, there was a delay between the erisin and between the engagement and
right.
And the marriage, and they would sign the tenoyim at the vart, at the engagement party. which means you lack, don't go look around for more shidduchim, see if you can do better. Are you committed to marry me? Is she, the kala? Yes, we're getting married. And they would sign tanoim at the engagement party to commit themselves that they will get married. And this is a dover chomer adma, whereby the Hasidim, they would say.
This is the custom in Eretz Yisrael.
Not by everyone.
My niece just got engaged in Eretz Yisrael. And according to
so they did it. They did it, but not everyone. The reason why people don't want to do this anymore today is.
It's usually, it's not a medic Yisrael.
By the Hasidim, there's a concept. If a person gets married and the marriage doesn't work out, there's a way out. How, what's the way out? There's a get. If a person signs a tanoim and they want to break the engagement,
get married and get
it. How do you break? How do you break the? There's no mechanism.
Get married.
And that's an extreme thing. There is no mechanism to break an engagement. If you sign the tanoim, that's serious business. If you're an Orthodox Jew and you have emunah in Chazal. And you live a religious life, and you sign a document that where you commit yourself to do something, and you makabel kinyan. That's it. There's no way out. Marriage, there's a way out. There's something called a divorce. An engagement, there's no way out. So unfortunately, society has become different, and Rahman al-Islam, we hear not so uncommon that there are broken engagements.
Disposable bowls.
Okay, they're broken engagements. So people are afraid to sign the document. Because in case chas v'sholem, there is a broken engagement, how do you break the tanoim? So there has to be money. You have to give a lot of money. And you have to, each one has to sign the shtar mechila. And even that's not so ay ay ay.
Right.
So because unfortunately in society there's a problem, many people have decided, just don't sign the tanoim. Don't make tanoim by the engagement party. Don't do it. Oh, but it's a minog Yisrael to have tanoim. So you know what? We'll do it by the wedding. If you made it to the wedding, we'll write the tanoim. And the tanoim will be from the time of the chazan's tish until 10 minutes later, you're under the chuppah. So we're mekayim the minog Yisrael to do the tanoim. And the tanoim was for 10 minutes. This became in America very, very popular. Rachel is saying that in Eretz Yisrael, they go back to the old minhag. I have no idea. 100% whatever is done is done. Okay, there are different people, different. I know of a chassan kala. Okay, I know a chassan kala with a kala. The father is very romantic. Try this at home. With they got engaged. It's very, very late. I apologize. Really, way over time. The kala said the kala. They had an engagement party. And they asked the kala, they asked the chassan, do you want to do the tanoim? By the vort. So the chassan said, the only reason why we should not do the tanoim by the vort is because sometimes we have sveikas. We have doubts lingering in our minds. You know, maybe this is not the right one. And maybe, you know, by the time 3-4 months come around to the wedding, I'm going to change my mind. So he says to the shver, I have no suffix. I want to marry her. I have no suffix. Let's do the tanoim. Okay, that's a pretty nice thing to say to a girl, right? Okay, I have no sakis. We can do the tanoim. No sakis.
And then he turned around and said,
no, he got married. They're happily married. 10 children later, they're very happily married.
What's the end of the story?
They got married. Now they live happily ever after. That's the end of the story. They married off some of their children already also. Okay, that's, but not everyone is like that. So to preserve the minhag Yisrael, you do the tanoim. Now, mi'ikar hadin, when do you do the tanoim? At the engagement. And then there's a delay. How long is the delay? I don't know how long the delay is. What do you do at the tanoim? The last thing, after you finish the tanoim, you sign the tanoim, you mekabel kinyan, and the two mothers come together, they hold the plate, an expensive piece of china worth $10,000.
Yeah.
And they read the tanoim and they say mazel tov, and they break the plate after 10 times. Finally, they get it to break. And then they call hatzalah because they got hurt. Right? And they break the plate. And then you broke that plate. That plate? How long do you think about a kli, an expensive kli that is oyved? I think about it for 12 months. That's right. For 12 months, you're going to be thinking about this clean. Every time you think about this clean, you're going to remember to fulfill your commitment and your obligations to prepare for this upcoming wedding. By breaking the plate, Rashi, by Chazal, by taking the kli that's expensive, and the oivet, breaking it, this is the makar, the clock ticks. You're going to be thinking about this for 12 months. Now, this memory association, the most popular technique, how to memorize things. Ever see these videos, how to improve your memory? Memory association. Chazal, we're ahead of the game. You're going to be remembering this expensive utensil that broke for 12 months. The clock is, every time you think about this utensil, you're going to automatically associate, you know, we have to make a wedding. And in this document that we signed, we promise to give money to buy pillows, to buy chickens, to buy all the different things that it says in the term, what you're going to set up a bias for the chosan and kalah. So in addition to the push-up shot, you break a plate in order to, you know, to calm everyone down, don't get carried, the gilu b'ra'ada, to be zoicher, the churban Yerushalayim, there is also an element when you break an expensive utensil, the memory is affected for 12 months. And by association, you're going to remember this. Under the chuppah, you break a glass utensil. Shana Rishayna. Every time you think about the glass, you'll think about your wife.
Once a year, right?
What? You'll think about Shana Rishayna. Memory association. That's what it's all about when you take this chazal in the bigger picture. All right, we have to stop here. It's extremely late. Sorry for overtime. Let's take a short break.
Where they had this knife and then they got into fight at the wedding that was.
Okay, that happened.